This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Today, a special broadcast from the Broward County Convention Center, the annual conference of the National Association of Hispanic Journalists. 5,000 in Charlotte, 100,000 in Chicago, 500,000 in Dallas. The enormous numbers at this spring's rallies to protest the U.S. House immigration bill surprised the public, Congress, even the organizers. The turnout also caught much of the mainstream media unawares, not only in cities with a relatively new influx of immigrants, but in places like Los Angeles as well. The size and significance of the demonstration sent a signal to newsrooms across the country. Latinos are no longer the silent minority that our readers and listeners need to know more about what's been going on beneath our radar, and that we need to see the 40 million and counting as an increasingly important part of our audience. Later in the program, the adventures of Miami private eye Lupe Solana, the conversation with mystery writer Carolina Garcia Aguilera. But first, the Latino beat. How do your newspapers, your radio and TV stations cover Latino issues? If you work in the media, did the immigration protests inspire changes in your newsrooms? Our number, as always, is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email talk@npr.org. We'll also be taking questions from the audience here in Fort Lauderdale. To start off, we turn to Macarena Hernandez, editorial columnist for the Dallas Morning News, and it's lovely to have you with us today.
Thank you so much.
Dallas is one of the first cities with big immigration protests. How ready was your newspaper to cover them?
We stumbled. The first march happened in March 25th, and, you know, journalists in general are skeptical about protests or marches. We don't want to tend to cover those sort of events. And there was about four of us that went to the event because we were curious to see how many people would show up. Mm-hmm. And there was 1,500 people, and we were shocked. So you can imagine 2 weeks later when we have 500,000, we were walking down the streets going, oh, my God. Oh, my God. This is Dallas. This doesn't happen in Texas. So, yes, I think that our paper recovered, and that first march gave us like a warm-up to what was coming.
As I understand it, the Dallas Morning News, like not a few other newspapers around the country, also publishes Spanish editions, and there was some confusion over who was supposed to cover what.
There was an assumption that the Spanish language reporter was going to be at the event, but there was about five of us that went just because we were curious. Mm-hmm. And, you know, talking to reporters here throughout the last few days, some newsrooms found out when they watched it on CNN. It caught most newsrooms across the country by surprise.
Well, tell us about the demographics of Dallas. I mean, how surprised should we have been?
We shouldn't have been surprised, but, you know, the immigrant community in Dallas is pretty much invisible, not anymore. But when you look at the demographics of the schools, that tells you everything. 65% of the kids in Dallas ISD are Latino. When you look at the kids in elementary level, you're talking about 70%. And in some schools, 95% of the kids are Latino. So those numbers should not surprise us.
You said that first demonstration, sort of a wake-up call, and after that, maybe better. But as you look around the newsroom, should it have been such a surprise? I mean, have anybody said we need to be better connected?
You know, I think our paper overall is pretty well connected. But I think it's just these demonstrations had been happening for months now, and they had been small, and they had been building momentum. And so 1,500 was huge, but mm-hmm. then 500,000, it was just out of this world.
And what was reaction from readership of your coverage?
I work for the Dallas Morning News, and it's in Texas, and it's a very conservative paper. So a lot of our readers who wrote in were saying, wow, we didn't realize there were that many here. But I think what they also didn't realize was that a lot of the people that were marching were Mexican Americans, people who felt like the civil rights movement in Dallas had kind of skipped over them, mm-hmm. that were kind of reclaiming. So it kind of morphed into immigrant and Mexican American kind of movement. So you couldn't really tell it apart. It was almost like two agendas marching.
Yeah, and some places there was some negative reaction to the number of Mexican flags in the crowds.
You know, I think things get lost in the translation, and I think people don't understand that for a lot of people, especially if you're not accepted as part of this country, why would you think that they would be coming out with American flags, first of all? I mean, you're telling these people to leave this country. And second of all, it's not like loyalty to Mexico. It's loyalty to what Mexico represents. It's almost this very nostalgic kind of family kind of symbolism, and it's more of a cultural pride. It's really not this, you know, we're going to overtake the United States and we want to reclaim Aslan.
Yes, okay. Another show, another subject. Let's introduce another voice now. Raul Ramirez, News and Public Affairs Director of NPR's member station in San Francisco, KQED. And Raul, it's nice to have you with us today.
Thank you, Neil. Nice to be here.
Long before you were in public radio, you were a reporter for the Washington Post, later for the San Francisco Examiner. And I think you also worked in this neighborhood as well.
I did. I used to be a reporter. My first newspaper job was as a reporter for the Miami Herald.
And in those days, they had something called the ethnic beat.
Some of these newspapers did. Some didn't label it as such, but they, in effect, that's what they had. They had one or two individuals who, on whom it fell to cover. If Latinos were the predominant population in Miami, of course, we have been the Cuban community, but also Miami had at the time and still does a significant African-American population. So eventually, by later, newspapers develop ethnic beats and moved away from them, have moved back to them, and have continued to experiment.
Mm-hmm. And how was it interpreted, for example, when you went to San Francisco?
Well, interestingly enough, I went to San Francisco having worked in Miami and Washington, D.C., covering a variety of issues, mainly criminal justice, but also covering Latino communities. And one of the early assignments I had at the San Francisco Examiner at the time was to cover stories in Chinatown. Now, the assumption was on the part of the editors who made the assignment, I presume that since I was an immigrant, I would know a lot about another immigrant community, that is a Chinese community. It was quite a shock to me. It was a shock. I had to learn all kinds of things about this community. And, of course, I set about doing what any reporter would do, which is to educate myself. But it was that the presumption that if you are one of us, them, that you know all about us, them, is one that still prevails in a lot of newsrooms. I think that a lot of the larger newsrooms have moved on from that.
All right. Let's get some listeners involved in the conversation. 800-989-8255 if you'd like to join us. 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email talk@npr.org. And we have a question from a listener here in the audience in Fort Lauderdale.
Hi, I'm Ricardo Pimentel from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Immigrants are a significant portion of the Latino population, but the bigger portion is not foreign-born. What are the coverage issues for this larger portion?
Macarena Hernandez, do you want to address that?
I think the biggest coverage issue is education. Education, as Antonio Villaraigosa has said, is the civil rights movement of this era, and I think that we cannot pound on that issue enough.
Raul, would you agree with that?
In terms of issues of importance to the both the immigrant and the U.S.-born community, yes, education, for sure. Health care is a huge important issue. And frankly, most of the issues that are of importance to all the communities that we cover are of importance to Latino communities.
And Ricardo, let me ask you, what issues do you see as important to cover there in Milwaukee?
I think any of the bread and butter issues that are of importance to the rest of the population are likely just as important to Latinos.
Do you have a reporter assigned to cover the Latino community?
I'm an editorial page editor. I don't have reporters. We have editorial writers who cover those issues.
All right. Thanks very much for being with us. Appreciate the question. Let's get a caller in on the line, and this is if I've hit the right button, Brooke calling from San Diego.
Hi.
Hi, Brooke. Go ahead, please.
I'm a reporter in the Los Angeles area, and I covered the March 25th march, the coalition march. And it caught us pretty much totally unawares because we have, in our newsroom, we have probably one or two Spanish-speaking reporters. And nobody monitored the Spanish-language stations, which is where the plans were broadcast, largely, where it was organized. So I was the only reporter assigned that day, and we were expecting maybe 100,000. So to have 500,000, I'd say probably closer to 1 million people there was amazing.
And how did people rethink things after being caught with their pants down?
We're taking Spanish language classes, that's how.
And do you think things will change next time around?
I think so. A lot of us are paying much closer attention to that community. I don't know why we weren't in Los Angeles, but for some reason you go with the status quo, you know.
Mm-hmm. All right, Brooke, thanks very much for the call. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And let me turn to Macarena Hernandez. This all comes at a time when a lot of newspapers are facing real problems in terms of budgets and as opposed to hiring on more reporters, a lot of papers are letting reporters go.
I think also what happens is that a lot of newspapers are also developing or starting up Spanish language papers, and they feel like that can be a substitute for coverage. But as Raul mentioned and Ricardo mentioned, that a lot of the issues that affect the general community, and considering that most of the Latinos here are U.S.-born Latinos, mm-hmm. you can't really just translate one from the other and expect it to reach both communities. You're talking about two completely different communities. And I think that's the big mistake when newspapers start thinking, okay, we're covering the Latino community because we started such and such newspaper in Spanish. And that's what I worry about. And I think most newspapers could hire most people that speak Spanish. And it just makes business sense to mm-hmm. do so.
Raul, what about your newsroom?
In terms of the coverage, I think we suffer from some of the same problems that a lot of the news media suffer. We tended to look at this story originally in a slightly different way than we look back at it now. We looked at it principally as a legislative story. There was a bill, the Sensenbrenner bill in the mm-hmm. House. It was a bill that was part of a political battle between the Bush administration and Democrats and so on. And we looked at it that way, which is a tendency of the news media to look at issues, of course, through the prism of what we know best, which in this case happens to be the coverage of legislation and the coverage of people in authority and prominent people. What we didn't do, and we do this very well in other kinds of stories, to think about the human dimension of this. What we didn't do was ahead of time to think in terms of what it means to a community of millions of people to suddenly be faced with the likelihood or the possibility that all of them will be branded, will be actually declared to be
felons.
And if you pause for a second to think about what it means to a mother to know that her child is going to be her grown child who is thinking of, has dreams of going to college, has dreams of building a life in this country, of what it's like to be suddenly labeled a felon, somebody who can't vote, somebody who can't fill out a job application without having to check a box that is going to doom them in terms of that job. We should have thought about it. We didn't.
All right. We're going to have to take a short break. And when we come back, we'll take more of your calls at 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK, our email address, talk@npr.org. Also, Maria Elena Salinas will join us. She's an anchor with Univision Telenetwork News. And I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, at the annual convention of the National Association of Hispanic Journalists. The big pro-immigration rallies across the country this spring were a wake-up call for Latinos, for politicians, and for the news media as well, at least much of it. Our guests are Macarena Hernandez, opinion columnist for the Dallas Morning News, and Raul Ramirez, news and public affairs director of NPR member station KQED in San Francisco. Of course, we want to hear from you as well. If you're in the news media, what challenges does your newspaper or your radio or TV station face covering Latinos? Have the protests inspired change? 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. We're also taking questions from the audience here. And Hispanics increasingly turn to Spanish language media for news. Maria Elena Salinas co-anchors Univision's Network News. She's also the author of I Am My Father's Daughter, Living a Life Without Secrets. She joins us now here at the stage in Fort Lauderdale. Nice to have you with us today.
My pleasure, Neil.
And besides language, what makes your nightly newscast different from, say, Bob Schieffer's?
Well, for one thing, besides it being in Spanish, I think we do cover a lot of the same issues that Bob Schieffer or, mm-hmm. or NBC or ABC or any other network does. We cover international news, we cover national news, but above and beyond that, we cover Hispanic news in the United States, and we cover Latin America, which is one of the reasons why we have been competing directly with ABC, CBS, and NBC, even though we are in Spanish. I think there is a misconception, and Macarena touched upon this a little bit, that Hispanics in this country are only Spanish-speaking, that they are recent immigrants who don't speak the language and cannot relate and have not assimilated. And that misconception, I think, has led a lot of newsrooms around the country, whether it's television, radio, or print, to lose out on an opportunity to reach a very large Hispanic audience that is bilingual, mm-hmm. That has the choice of either reading or watching or listening to English or Spanish, and a lot of them are choosing Spanish, not so much because of the language, but because of the the content, because we do communicate with, we do cover Hispanic America, and they see themselves reflected in the coverage of our news.
And it's an opportunity you've taken full advantage of.
Well, of course, because we are here to cover news, and we're an American company, and you know we are in the United States, and we just happen to broadcast in Spanish. Mm-hmm. We are not Spanish news. We do not report only on Latin America or only on the Hispanic community. Our audience has the same type of needs and interests that mainstream America does. But on top of that, they have additional interests, and that's the type of thing that we cater to. It's interesting because the reporter that called a little while ago from Los Angeles said that in order to deal with covering the Hispanic community better, they were taking Spanish language lessons. And I don't know that that's necessarily the answer, because you need to look around you and realize that Hispanics are Americans too. There are a lot of them American citizens, legal American residents, and they can communicate in both languages. It's amazing. There are some studies that say that even up to 9 out of 10 Hispanics in this country at least understand English somewhat.
Mm-hmm. Let me ask you, we'll get a question from the audience in just a minute, but let me ask you the same point that Raul Ramirez brought up earlier, that his station, and I think NPR too, tended to cover the immigration debate as a policy issue, national politicians in Washington, D.C. How did Univision cover it?
Well, we've been covering immigration for 25 years, not 25 days or 25 weeks like mainstream media. So we were not surprised that the issue of immigration was very important to the Hispanic mm-hmm. community. I think one thing that surprised everyone, even us, is the amount of people that were out there, particularly because it was not an organized movement. Latinos, unfortunately, don't have a leader like Martin Luther King or Cesar Chavez. There were grassroots movements that spontaneously came out with these protests and then eventually began to organize on a national level.
All right, let's get back to the audience and questions. From the microphone here in Fort Lauderdale.
Hi, my name is Federico De Jesus. I work with Senate Democratic Leader Harry Reid. I do Hispanic communications outreach, and Maria Elena and Macarena are one of my victims who receive all my emails. But my question is for the panel. As someone who does outreach towards the Hispanic community, one of the biggest challenges that I have is how to get our message across to the non-Spanish speaking Hispanics. And aside from immigration, you don't really see that much coverage in mainstream press on Hispanic issues, like 1 out of 3 Hispanics in the U.S. doesn't have health care coverage, housing. There's a lot of issues that affect Hispanics, but there's a big population, even half of the electorate, I think, of the Hispanic community that doesn't speak Spanish. So my question is, do you think this new immigration deal is going to change that? And what could I do? What would you suggest that I do to outreach to that market of Hispanics that doesn't speak Spanish?
Macarena Hernandez, why don't you try that first?
I think that health issues are definitely a big issue in the Latino community that we don't cover enough. But I think, unfortunately, when mainstream media starts covering one aspect of the Latino community, it's like, oh, we're already covering the community because we've been writing about immigration for the last month. But they don't realize that there's so many other issues. And so I think what you do, I mean, even the emails I get from you, like, they inform my columns, whether I call you or not, or whether I include your senator's name. I think they keep me abreast as to what's going on at Capitol Hill. And I think that's one great way. Make allies with people in the newsrooms that are interested in covering these types of stories, because usually reporters are the ones that can take the story to the editor and, you know, then maybe get it on the page.
And Raul, what about you?
I think what happened in March with the demonstrations may be a wake-up call for a lot of news organizations, but a lot of us news organizations, mainstream and public broadcasting news organizations, got the wake-up call a long time ago. In the area of health, for example, we at KQED have a program that we distribute statewide that is carried by a dozen public radio stations on health issues, with a particular emphasis on Latinos and other people who are underrepresented in the policy discussion and the information discussion, aiming precisely at the population you're talking about, as well as their neighbors who are not Hispanic and not Latinos, but who have an interest in what happens in their communities. And we try to make those connections. I think if you look around, looking around this convention, looking at the news papers and some of the samples of the reporting that is being done, we're doing a lot better than we were doing 20, 30 years ago when I first got into this.
Mm-hmm. When I first started...
Go ahead, Margarita.
I'm sorry. When I first started, When I first started thinking about career in journalism, the only stories I read about Latinos were either a guy standing in front of a judge in an orange jumpsuit or the new census numbers. They're getting bigger. Other than that, I didn't really read anything, and I do think that we've come a long way in the 10 years that I've been in this profession.
Well, Maria Elena Salinas, you started out, you've done a lot of English language media as well, and get some response, your response.
Yes,
to this.
As of 5 years ago, I've been a syndicated columnist with King Features, and most of the papers that publish my column are in English. And I do write about the Americas, Latin America and Hispanic issues in the U.S., and I really do get a very big response. Sometimes, unfortunately, it's hate mail from people who read my column who are not crazy about the issues. And I know that some people in this room have shared some of that hate mail with me. But, you know, I do sometimes get a response from Hispanic Americans who do say, you know, thank you for informing me. And if it wasn't maybe for your column in my particular area, I would not know anything about the Hispanic community. In some newspapers, I am probably the only Hispanic voice. And it's funny because I am not only perceived as covering Hispanic issues, but just because I am a Hispanic. There have been papers who have been approached by the salespeople from King Features, and they say, oh, no, we already have a Hispanic that is a columnist. We don't need another Hispanic that's a columnist, without realizing that there are a lot of different perspectives and a lot of different points of view that can come across.
Not more than one. Raul Ramirez.
Just a quick point. One way that you might get the mainstream media to do a better job of covering those aspects of a story is to remind them that it's not only a question of accuracy, which it is, and a question of fairness and equity, which it also is, but it's also a question of survival for them, particularly in the larger areas. I saw a study very recently where at least 50 million people in the United States get most of their news, or it's a fair amount of their news, from the ethnic media. That ought to be a wake-up call to the mainstream media as to what it is that people hunger for.
Let's get another caller on the line, and this is John. John's calling us from Grand Haven in Michigan.
Hello. I was wondering if Univision would ever consider having English subtitles so someone like myself who doesn't speak Spanish could follow along with the show.
Well, I think that right now we have a lot of English language viewers, but that's because we are in the middle of a World Cup soccer tournament and we have exclusive rights and people like to watch that. You know, I don't think that they would. In the past, it has been talked about, and Univision believes that as of right now, we broadcast in Spanish to an audience that speaks Spanish, and, you know, we encourage the use of the Spanish language in this country, but we also encourage people to assimilate and speak English. But as of right now, Univision has not, and I wish they would, because I think that, like I said before, a lot of the information that we provide in our news programs is very valuable to people in this country, no matter what language they speak. And I wish that the mainstream media would cover some of these Hispanic issues, particularly Latin America, would cover them more. After all, this is the same continent. We have, more than 18 countries that are our neighbors, yet we completely ignore them. Some people don't even know, you know, where some of these countries are located. So I wish that English language media would cover Hispanic issues in Latin America more.
Okay. Thanks very much for the question, John.
Thank you.
Let's go now to another question here in the audience in Fort Lauderdale.
Hi, my name is Jordan Levin, and I'm the Latin music critic for the Miami Herald. And I believe the mainstream media missed the March story because I think, for the most part, they don't cover Latinos in this country. I think, despite the improvements that your panelists mentioned, I think unless you get the rare case of a Ricky Martin or a Gasolina, they treat Latinos like they are from a foreign country, or they're in a foreign country, like they're exotic and unimportant. And I frankly don't understand how they can live in this country now and not look around at their schools, their workplaces, their neighbors, and listen to their radio and not realize that they're part of this culture. And I'd like to hear why you think that is.
Well, Macarena Hernandez, I'm going to turn to you first.
I think because there is this perpetual idea that the Latino in this country is a perpetual immigrant. You know, there's this idea.
An alien,
you know. And so I think that they're always seen like that. But I think Jordan is right that there is a need to cover the Latino community in ways that are more meaningful than what we do now. There have been improvements, but can they make more improvements? Yes. I was talking to a reporter out of Mississippi, and she was telling me that there were these attacks on immigrants in the community, and there was no one on staff who spoke Spanish. And she says that someone who likes to humanize these stories, I couldn't interview the victims. I had to go by the police report. And I think, well, if you're constantly telling these stories through many, many filters, you kind of don't humanize this really huge group of people.
Raul Ramirez, the ethnic beat that you were talking about that you started out on in some places really came out of the civil rights movement. And I wonder if you see a lot of people drawing a lot of parallels.
There are parallels. There are people who say that first the civil rights movement and then the great riots beginning with Watts and so on were the greatest promotion vehicle for principally initially African Americans in newsrooms, people who had been relegated to the back of the newsroom to jobs that didn't have really a whole lot of importance and who suddenly became important mm-hmm. in newspapers, particularly being able to get out into the communities where the news was happening that could no longer be ignored. And these people proved themselves to be formidable reporters and writers. And that cycle has repeated itself time and again, and I look forward, as opposed to the day when the Arab Americans or Asian Americans in the back of the newsrooms of today will come forth and be allowed to emerge as well.
All right. Let me ask you about your newsroom, though, at the Miami Herald. Were they caught by surprise? Did they suffer the same situation that you were just describing?
I actually think that the Herald does a pretty good job of covering Latino culture and issues. But Miami is 60% Latino. How can we not? I do think we were a little slow in treating all Latinos. It was all Cuban mm-hmm. all the time. And I think it took us a little while to catch on, for instance, to the huge influx of South Americans, of Argentines and Venezuelans and Colombians that have really changed Latino culture in Miami. Right. But I actually think we cover a lot of Latino. We cover Latinos in English on a regular basis.
We're talking today about the Latino beat after the rallies, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. Angela calling from South Bend in Indiana.
Yes, sir. Thank you. It's a pleasure being on the show.
Well, thank you for calling.
I have a comment. I live in South Bend, Indiana, and it's known for Notre Dame, University of Notre Dame, and I actually was a student at St. Mary's College, the sister college. It's very unfortunate that in the past 10 years, our Latino population has quadrupled, and our media coverage is non-existent. It's preposterous. The March protests, there was no coverage here, no local coverage. The biggest concern of people that I actually heard someone say is, oh, no, now I can't go to the taqueria and get my taco today because it's closed. Oh, well, I'll go tomorrow. It was almost appalling to see just the lack of concern and lack of real attention to a major issue that's moving our country, which is 2 hours to the west in Chicago. There's massive protests, thousands and thousands of people turn out, and I mean, as an African-American, I'm very involved in, unfortunately, ethnic activities that go on in the town, as they're still labeled. And it was just like ghost town. There was no noise being made at all.
Yeah. Let me ask you, Maria Elena Salinas. Places like South Bend just a few years ago did not have, as our caller suggests, sizable Latino populations. And this has changed across the country, North Carolina, Kansas, Nebraska, unlikely places.
Milwaukee, yes, there's a lot of places where the Hispanic community has been growing tremendously. As a matter of fact, the first city to buy my column, knowing that it was a Hispanic on Hispanic issues, was Madison, Wisconsin, which mm-hmm. really surprised me. But, you know, it's interesting what she is saying, that there seems to be no interest. If there's no interest in the media, it's possible that there's no interest in the community. And I think one of the reasons is because the tone of the debate on immigration has been so negative that people are just completely shutting themselves out of it, and they're looking at it as something almost as if it were, if you're covering, you know, a crime story. And I think that that's one of the worst things that has happened. More than the, even more than the lack of coverage, has been the negative tone of the coverage. Mm-hmm. I think this immigration debate, more than a debate, has sounded up to now as a monologue. Up to the time where the marches began to surface, it was just a monologue, where you, a one-sided debate in which you heard constant attacks either from legislators in Washington or from some in the news media, particularly in cable stations, where all they did was constantly attack immigrants and blame them for all of the ills of the country. Now you're beginning to hear different voices of people giving the point of view of immigrants. And Americans are finally beginning to realize that, you know, immigrants are human also. And that a lot of those people that were out there marching were not necessarily undocumented immigrants. They were U.S. citizens of Hispanic descent and legal residents.
We're going to have to take a short break. And when we come back, and by the way, Angela, thanks very much for the phone call. Appreciate it.
Oh, thank you.
We're going to have to take a short break, so we'll talk more about this issue when we return, and also talk about a Cuban-American detective. This is NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan at the Association of Hispanic Journalists Convention in Fort Lauderdale. And here are the headlines from some of the other stories we're following here today at NPR News. Both chambers of Congress are debating the war in Iraq. In the Senate, Democrats shifted the debate from troop withdrawals to whether the Senate should protest reports that Iraqis who've killed U.S. troops will be given amnesty by their government. And President Bush declared that the northwestern Hawaiian Islands are a national monument, making it the largest marine reserve on the planet. The action will protect one of the last intact marine ecosystems in the world. Details on those stories and, of course, much more later today on All Things Considered from NPR News. Tomorrow, it's Science Friday, and Ira Flatow will be here to talk about what scientists are learning about the causes of addiction. That's tomorrow on Talk of the Nation Science Friday. In a few minutes, Miami author Carolina Garcia Aguilera, creator of Lupe Solano, Private Eye. But right now we're wrapping our discussion of the Latino beat. Our guests are Maria Elena Salinas, anchor for Univision Network News, also Macarena Hernandez, editorial columnist for the Dallas Morning News, and Raul Ramirez, news and public affairs director of NPR member station KQED in San Francisco. And let's get another question from the audience here in Fort Lauderdale.
Hi, I'm Richard Colvin. I'm a longtime education writer, and at one point my claim to fame was that I worked for Raul Ramirez, so he set me off right. Both Macarena and Raul mentioned the importance of covering education for this growing audience. Journalists are not supposed to be advocates, and yet the quality of the education being received in America's public schools in so many of these communities, South Bend, North Carolina, elsewhere, that have these changing populations, is so dire, so poor, so weak, so endangering our national interest, that it may, in fact, call for advocacy. So how do you reconcile these two roles of not being advocates as journalists and yet necessary to advocate for better education?
Well, we're going to pass over Macarena just for the moment, because she is supposed to be an advocate as an editorial writer. Raul, let's go to you.
Well, you don't have to become an advocate. You can let the stories that are real, that are grounded on the reality that you're describing, tell the story. We have an ongoing series of stories happening right now by Catherine Barron, our education reporter, that is looking at the impact of the ban on bilingual, virtual ban on bilingual education in California. It's a very factual story or series of stories. It goes into classrooms, it talks to teachers, and so on, and it really makes some very, very strong points that are not her points, but it's the realities that she's finding. That's what journalists do best. We don't need, I love columnists, I love editorial pages, but we don't need to approach expand our job to make it a job of advocacy. We can simply make it a job of telling the reality that's before us as well as we can.
Maria Elena Salinas, do you see yourself as an advocate?
Well, funny you should ask. Well, I do think that there's a fine line between advocacy and being a journalist. I juggle that all the time, being an anchor for Univision Network News and also being a columnist. And besides that, I also participate in a lot of different campaigns. I have in the past done several videos for the Department of Education, motivating parents to get involved in their children's, in Spanish, of course, motivating the parents to get involved in their children's education. I've done so for the Health Department. And even more, I've gotten involved in Get Out the Vote campaigns and voter registration campaigns. I do not believe that my role as an advocate in these cases is jeopardizing the credibility of my work, because I can go out and tell someone that they should vote. I just don't tell them who to vote for. I think as long as you don't get into partisan politics, the role of the journalist has become more and more as an advocate, especially in this day and age where people are getting tailor-made designer news, where there's different channels out there that you watch depending on what your if it fits your ideological mold. So I think that as long as journalists continue to be very careful in staying away from partisan politics, I think that there's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with being able to get to do a little bit more advocacy.
Mm-hmm. And Macarena, you are an advocate as an editorial writer, but you see a dividing line here.
Well, I'm like in a different camp. I'm supposed to say what I feel, and I think it is important to be an advocate, because especially when you talk about immigrant communities where parents don't have ownership of the schools, it's important for someone to be able to point out to what's going on in the schools. And especially when we're spending so much money in public education to make sure that these programs, there is some sort of accountability. So I feel like it's in the best interest, national interest.
All right. Before we leave, Raul Ramirez, I need to ask you a question about public radio's coverage. As you're part of it, but you're also an observer of it. How are we doing?
We could do a lot better, and we're doing a lot better than we have before. If by we you mean NPR, I think NPR's coverage of issues of concern to non-majority communities, I the terminology really escapes me, has improved.
Terminology escapes us all.
Has improved. We have a long way to go.
All right. Thank you very much, and appreciate all of your times today. Joining us here on the panel, Maria Elena Salinas, Emmy Award-winning anchor of the television news show Noticiero Univision and syndicated columnist for King Features. Her book, I Am My Father's Daughter, Living a Life Without Secrets. Thank you very much for being with us today. You just heard from Raul Ramirez, News and Public Affairs Director for KQED, our member station in San Francisco. And thanks to Macarena Hernandez, opinion columnist for the Dallas Morning News, joining us here in Fort Lauderdale.
Thank you very much.
When we come back, a detective who prefers Jimmy Choo's to gumshoes.